Welcome to Rough Drafts, How God Writes His Love in Our Stories, a podcast that explores the faith journeys of our friends and neighbors in Burns, Tennessee. Everyone has a story to tell, and in this podcast, we'll hear powerful and inspiring stories of how God works in the ordinary lives of people like you and me. Our stories are unfinished and perfectly imperfect. They are just rough drafts, a glimpse of what is to come because God is still at work, writing plot twists, introducing new characters, and bringing good even from the most challenging circumstances. Join us as we see what God is up to in our stories. Here's your host, Matthew Hyatt.
Well, friends, this is another fun episode of Rough Drafts today. I'm really excited about our guest. You have already heard from his son in our On Location episode, so that should be a pretty good hint as to who you get to hear from today. I met him a year ago in Honduras. There's hint number two and three, I think, and I thoroughly enjoyed him. I love his heart, his passion for ministry, his youth minister stories. I love his faithfulness. I just love this guy, and you are too. Tim Hines, welcome.
Hey, man, it is good to be here with you today.
Thanks for doing this.
Hey, no problem.
You're one of those people, Tim, that like I've not known long, but two or three days with you in Honduras, I felt like I'd known you forever, and I just like you and want people to get to know you. The whole time you had our whole crew in stitches with stories from being a youth minister, from fishing, from Honduras to who knows what. I have no clue what you're going to tell me today.
Neither do, brother, just so you know.
Well, it's best when you make it up as you go. So, Tim, what's your God story?
Man, I was not planning on being a youth minister in Florida. I was planning on, being in business, and I was in business. And I got launched by the world, I'll say, into ministry because I decided that I didn't want to, work in the world. I didn't want to be a worldly worker, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I wanted to run wide open in ministry, and the boss I had at the time was not very conducive to that. And I started to get a feel for youth ministry, and started doing it in 1985 in Central Florida. And
is this where you want me to say I was 1 year old at the time, or no?
Oh, are you really?
Did that hurt your feelings a little bit?
Dude, I am old. Well, hey, I'll get that out of the way right now. I'm 61 years old, but I got a lot of miles on me.
Yeah, you do. Good miles.
Well, some are good, some are bad, but either way, it's a lot of miles. You know, if I was a Ford truck, I'd be in a museum somewhere, and they'd be saying, dude, this guy right here, man, he drove this truck in the ground.
Somebody changed the oil. I don't know what happened.
But so I went into full-time youth ministry, and then I started doing disaster relief work, and with Andrew down in Miami. I was youth minister over in Bradenton at the time, and then I went from Bradenton to Sarasota, and from Sarasota I went to Melbourne Church of Christ. So had a great time in youth ministry, was really involved in all the gatherings of the youth ministers in Central Florida. Just had a great time all around. Loved it, every minute of it. But there was something missing. And I like any other youth minister, I'm crazy busy during the summer. Didn't have time, to go on a mission trip. I had a buddy, Terry Reeves, and he was inviting me, and I kept saying no, and he'd invite me again. I'd say no, and he just kept inviting me, man. He never stopped. And so I finally said, look, I'll go for 1 week under one condition. And he said, whatever it is, I'll take it. I said, that you never ask me again. And when I got to Honduras, honestly, I didn't have the best mission experience, but I had a great experience, and I could see how God could really manifest himself through the people that we could bring down there. He introduces himself to the new people that we bring on trips. A lot of times for many people, they've really never encountered God in a burning bush kind of way, or just a personal way where they felt like he was listening and they were doing exactly what he wanted them to do. I just jumped in with both feet and I said, I want to do this. Of course, I was married, had two little boys, and it took me 6 years of going and coming back and forth every summer with youth groups for my wife to finally say, and I wasn't pressuring her, she needed to make that decision on her own, but for my wife to say, let's move to Honduras. So we did move to Honduras in 2001 and came back after Katrina in 2005 and managed groups here during Katrina or after Katrina for 2 years in the Louisiana area. And we managed 15,800 volunteers, which was an awful lot of volunteers.
Yeah, that sounds like a whole lot.
I kind of tell people, you know, God kind of got me involved in Torch so that I would get ready for Katrina.
Wow.
Because on our Torch trips, you know, we on the first Torch trip that I went on, they didn't do a whole lot of interaction with the local people. Of course, we went to church and, you know, we did some things, but it didn't seem to have a whole lot of direction. And so as they asked me to come back the next year, and I said, yeah, I really wasn't impressed. And they said, well, what can we do to make this continue, you know, with you getting your youth group involved? Because the first time I went, I didn't take my youth group. And I said, well, you know, I just think we ought to be serving people, you know, and there's just a lot of people that have needs, and we certainly could have the ability to help with those needs. And whether it's planting a church in their community, which we planted 17 churches down there,
17
in Honduras.
Churches. Wow.
And those churches are still thriving and working. And most of them are small concrete block buildings. And then the churches add on a little bit here and there with some classrooms or with some mission groups. Some of our groups will go back every year to those areas and do a little work on the church and do a little work in the community and you know, build relationship between the local churches and us as Americans, but mainly, of course, Jesus Christ. We want to be the hands and feet of Jesus. We want to serve these people any way that we can.
Yeah.
So when we did that, everything changed for me. I loved being a youth minister, but it was lacking. It was lacking, and I needed a bigger purpose. And even though I loved and enjoyed very much being a youth minister, and the kids were special and the churches were great, I just felt like God was calling me to a third world country. And I'll back up the story to say, I grew up in Costa Rica. My dad was very wealthy when we lived there in Costa Rica. And so I was kind of like the kid with a golden spoon. I got a brother who's 8 years older than me. He was already in college. Actually, he got married while we lived in Costa Rica. He went to Freed Hardeman. My sister went to Harding, and she ended up marrying a guy at Harding. And he's in ministry, and I'm a missionary, and I preach at a local church here in Covington, Louisiana, when I'm here. But they're the coolest church in the world because they pay me what they can for when I'm here, and when I'm gone, they cover me and make sure that the classes are taught and the sermons are preached, and gives me an opportunity to spend the whole summer down in Honduras. So I'll be 6 weeks in Honduras this time.
Oh, how cool!
Instead of 8 weeks, I was there 8 weeks last summer, but 6 weeks will be a good time for me this summer.
Yeah.
So we've been tweaking Torch Missions since its inception. And this will be my 32nd year going to Honduras. And I'm pretty excited about that.
You know, it's a shame you don't know anything about this by now. I mean, you know, you just started yesterday.
Well, you know, we tweak it all the time, and there's always room for improvement.
Oh, absolutely.
We're certainly, you know, our biggest thing is safety, of course, of all the participants that come. We've got a lot of teenagers that come. We encourage youth groups to come with their youth ministers, and we love elders to come from any church. Because we'd like to show them, you know, what we've been doing down there for the last 31 years. And so it's exciting because, you know, we get to serve in communities. We've built houses for the poor. And to date, we've built over 3,500 houses, probably close to 38 million meals distributed. Four schools, a clinic that runs full time and sees patients for free and gives them American medicines for free. And that's run by Dr. Gail Davidson, who's a family practitioner. And from state service, when she retired, she moved to Honduras and she runs that clinic there on our property in Santa Ana, just outside of Tegucigalpa, about 25 kilometers outside of Tegus. And so we kind of pour ourselves into the communities. We build them some houses. We study with them. We spend a lot of time cultivating relationships with these communities. Many times the community will give us the plot of land to put the church on. In fact, I don't think we've ever paid for a piece of land, but they deeded the land over to us. And so those properties are protected under our nonprofit that is established also in Honduras as a NGO. And so we're legal and operating. We handle all logistics. We have a big mission house that'll hold 120 people now. We try to improve on that every year. We added a new kitchen and a new cafeteria last summer. This summer we're finishing up our soccer court with lights and nets and all that. and the bathrooms for the center there are also being done as we speak. Beautiful property. It's at 4,800 feet elevation. Always cool at night. It's in a nice temperate zone, 68 degrees at night, 60 sometimes, and gets up to 75 in the daytime. So you can't work in an area much better than that.
I mean, I kind of thought y'all were playing a giant practical joke on me because when we got to that compound, it was so perfect. Like, it's just unbelievably good.
Well, we've spent a lot of time trying to get it that way, and it's not perfect yet. Trust me, we're running around behind buildings trying to make sure hot water's working. But the one good thing on our property is that everywhere on our property is purified water.
Yes.
And we actually have a water fountain there, you know, one like you'd see in a school or a library here or at a gym, nowhere in Honduras is there a water fountain because nowhere has as much purified water as we have.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
It is a beautiful thing, and none of the people get sick when they come, and so we always want to keep that avenue open for people to be able to stay with us and use our resources, if you will. And our experience, we want to make things easy for people. A lot of ministries have been started just by people coming on our torch trips.
Yeah.
Participants or volunteers will say, man, I really want to, I want to build a church. I want to put in a well. I want to help at a school, you know, and we're like, hey, we're here to help you answer your calling. Because I feel that, you know, if God calls you, you know, too many people that God calls don't respond to his calling.
Yeah.
And when God calls you, he expects you to move in the moment.
He says, answer the phone.
He does not expect you. And I'm going to tell you the story of my son and how he came to be a full-time missionary. I'm sure he already has, but it's pertinent to mentoring people. And that's part of what we do is we want to mentor everyone that comes through our program to be the best that they can be. And we talk about these things in devotionals. You know, we talk about how God uses us all and he has a plan for all of us, and how we shouldn't turn our back on his plan. But instead, you know, what happens is people come back to the States. You know, school starts, they get into sports. They get a serious girlfriend or a serious boyfriend. And, you know, next summer comes up and those same people aren't coming back anymore. But there are people that come back every year because they understand the value of our trip. And I'm not saying the other people don't understand the value. They just get sidetracked by what the U.S. has. You know, they either get married, they're buying a house, they're getting new jobs, they're having kids, you know, they're working in their home church, which is all those things are good and normal.
Yeah.
But for me, and I'm telling you my God story, it wasn't, all of that was working for me, but it wasn't as fulfilling as I wanted it, as I wanted to feel as a man of God. And so I searched and searched myself and decided that I needed to go on this path. My boys grew up there. You know, for the 4 years we were there, they were in a private school that was designed for missionaries and their kids. And so they learned Spanish, which they both speak Spanish fluently right now. And so my son Dalton was living here in Covington with us, and he got married, started having kids, bought him a house. And honestly, I was not thinking that he was going to be a missionary or even in ministry. You know, he was certainly involved in our church, you know, smart kid. And one day he calls me up and says, "Hey, me and Jen want to talk to y'all." And so we went over to talk to him. And the next thing I know, he says they want to be missionaries to Honduras. Hmm. And I was excited, of course, but you don't just say, "I'm going to be a missionary in Honduras," and jump on the next plane and go down there.
Right.
You know, you got to have support, and support is not always easy to come by. And even if you do have support, you know, your supporters' jobs change, they move. You know, there's a lot of factors that go into individuals supporting missionaries. We'd certainly love it if churches would take that responsibility as a whole, but it's not cheap to raise your family in a third world country. Everybody might think it is, but it's not.
No.
You know, you got to educate your kids, and you need to, and now Jen, my son's wife, Dalton's wife, is a certified teacher. She's working on her master's right now, but she's a certified teacher from the States. And so she's homeschooling her boys, and they'll be accredited, you know, when they come back to the States to get their college or wherever they go. Maybe they'll go somewhere else.
Yeah.
But their boys already speak Spanish fluently.
That's so cool.
So, I don't even remember learning it because I was their boy's age, you know, first, second, third grade. My dad dropped me in an all Spanish school and said, "Good luck." And I came home and said, "Dad, I don't understand a word they said." And he said, "Don't matter. You're going back tomorrow."
No habla, no habla.
And so for a little boy, you know, in an all Spanish school who didn't speak any Spanish, they taught me Spanish, and I learned how to speak mostly within about a year and a half, 2 years. I lived in Costa Rica for 7 years. And so that was a good training for me. I wasn't planning on being a missionary. My dad had great wealth and owned several different kinds of meat packing plants and vegetable processing plants in Costa Rica. But the country of Costa Rica nationalized it and took it.
Mm.
And so that we flew back to Miami in one of our planes and started all over there in Miami.
Wow.
And so my high school and college years, I grew up in Miami. And I have a great fondness for Miami and for the Sunset Church there. love them, and good folks. And one of my best friends is an elder there now, and just great to, know that the people you were running with, are still helping to run the church, and they're very active, and they encourage their people to go on mission trips, and they see that bigger picture. So I did have a healthy youth group to grow up in, and I would certainly tell people that that's certainly a benefit for you to grow up in a youth group with a good youth minister and a good youth minister's wife. And so I would never diminish any of that work that, that God had me doing. I think in reality, he was preparing me to go to Honduras, and he used my friend to get me there. I spoke Spanish fluently, so I never had to learn the language, and it just all came easy and natural for me. We started bringing in containers of hospital supplies and equipment, X-ray machines and mammogram machines and CAT scan machines and anesthesia machines, any kind of machine you could think of. We probably shipped it down there and installed it into several of the public hospitals that are there in Honduras. There's 26 altogether. And so we had an awful good time and fun time working with the president and his wife at the time. And they afforded us, when we lived there, full access. He was a very good president. His name was Ricardo Maduro. His wife's name was Ocañas, Aguas Ocañas. And she was from Spain. He was from Honduras. And they just really helped us help the poor. We bring in groups of doctors from the States, and they would say, man, we want to go somewhere remote. And I'd call her up, the first lady, at 9 o'clock in the morning, and say, hey, I got some doctors in the country. They want to go out to a remote area. She said, well, Tim, you start looking at the map of Honduras. You tell me where you want to go, and I'll go ahead and line up two helicopters to take y'all out there, and y'all run clinics and do whatever you want, and I'll, they'll bring you back.
Wow.
So we did that a lot. I mean, I would say that, that we were taking a helicopter trip, every other week, and going somewhere or doing something to help the poor in some way, form, or fashion. It's been a real blessing for me. And again, I have what seems like a countless amount of stories that help me to realize that this is all a God thing. I'll tell you one, and then I'll move on to Dalton. I'm not sure if I told you this one or not, but when I was there during my first couple of years there, I get a call from one of my supporters, and his he tells me, he says, hey, Tim, he says, I'm driving here with my wife, and she wants to tell you about a dream she had last night. And I said, okay, great. Let's hear it. So she starts in talking and explaining that her dream entailed her working a laser machine, and she was taking tattoos off rehabilitated gang members.
Okay.
And that's exactly what I said. Okay. Because I knew that that wasn't my calling. Okay. I didn't, that was not my talent, working with rehabilitated gang members that had been in jail for 4 years and now were getting their, wanted to get their tattoos removed so that they could assimilate back into the society.
Okay, because that's like a big hairy deal, because when they get those tattoos off, they're kind of giving the finger to the gang, and like, that's how you make people not like you, right?
That is correct.
Okay.
There was real gang people, people that weren't getting out of the gangs, trying to find us and locate us and do away with us with this program and the machine and destroy it. But we were careful enough, and God was watching over us, more importantly, because it was a worthy ministry. And while that person was, her name was Marilyn Gilroy, and while Marilyn Gilroy and Gail Davidson, our doctor, was zapping them with the laser, I was talking to them about Jesus. And so I found that as a great time for me to find my little niche in that little area. But I told her, I said, that was, I kind of jumped ahead in that story. I'm sorry. I told her, I said, well, that's an interesting dream. But I don't know any gang people down here. And I don't, you know, that's really not my scene.
Yeah, I don't have a laser machine either.
Exactly. And I said, I just wanted to tell you. She said, I just wanted to tell you what I dreamed. And I said, okay, well, great. I said, have a great day. And I was on my way to the first lady's office. I walk into her office that morning. And she says, Tim, we have a real serious problem. And I said, okay, well, how can I help? She said, well, we have these gang members that have been rehabilitated for 2 years, and we want to reassimilate them back into the society, but they have these tattoos that need to be removed, and we need to figure out a way to get them off of them, and I need you to help me find a solution from the U.S. And I said, well, you're never going to believe this, but I just got off the phone with one of my supporters not 45 minutes ago, and that's exactly what she told me she dreamed last night. And of course, the first lady said, you know, that's amazing. That's a sign from God. We need to do this.
Yeah.
And so I called my supporter back after that meeting. I said, well, I guess we're doing this. So you need to find out what the machine cost and let me know what the price is. And the machine came back for $99,000.
Oh, wow.
And so again, I said, well, there's no way that a third world country, Honduras, is going to drop $100,000 for a laser machine. So I felt confident going back to her and saying, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, it's $100,000. And so that's what I did. And she said, okay, let's get started on it and I'll get the money.
Wow.
And she did get the money, and she wrote a check to our nonprofit down there. And we bought the machine, brought it down, and that part of our ministry started. You can find that on our webpage at ircorp.org. And there you find a lot of other information there. But my son decided that he wanted to invest his life in Honduras and with his family. And so they've been down there. They're going now on their fifth year, and people are highly impressed with him. And so am I.
Me too.
He's done a phenomenal job, and so is his wife. And they also help to run our mission house and buy the food for the groups and handle all the logistical stuff there on our campus. We have another missionary. His name is Mark Connell. He lives in Tegucigalpa. He handles any groups that stay in Tegucigalpa. In case we have overlapping groups, we have different places for them to stay. And we have buses, and we manage and move those buses around. We have our own bus drivers. We have our own cooks. We have the cleaning ladies that clean our property are members of the church, and they are some kind of awesome.
Yes, they are.
God has put together a team of people that help us all to do great things, and he's made it possible for us to do those great things that we truly enjoy doing.
Yeah, I mean, you almost feel guilty when you leave after one of these trips because of all the cool things that you get to see and do and experience. And yeah, you work hard, but it's just so cool. You know, it's there's not much like it.
Well, I would agree. I've been on a lot of other mission trips, and they're good. You know, they're better than the first one that I went on. I hope that they can learn some things from what we do, and we can learn some things from what they do, and we're all happy sharing good information with each other and how to really become a missionary and in a way that you can stay a missionary. And that's harder than jumping on a missionary bandwagon because the church has money in their account and they're going to support a missionary. That's harder to do when you want to do it as a lifetime job or calling.
Yeah, anybody can go for a week, but it takes some intentionality to stay for a decade.
It does. And you really have to find your ministry niche and what God has programmed you to do and the talents that he's given each and every one of us. And, you know, we want to kind of force you to use those talents while you're there so that you feel like you're pretty accomplished in some physical stuff and even in some spiritual stuff when you leave. We want you to be thinking outside the box a little bit, not in the out of the word, of course, but we want you to think about, you know, where your life is going and what is your plan and how is God moving in your life and what, you know, where does he have you going?
So,
and are you listening to him? Those are things that we talk about while you're down there. Sometimes we have those conversations just sitting at a table with three or four teenagers or with three or four volunteers. And then other times we preach it, you know, in our devotionals and teach about, you know, what God is doing there in Honduras. And in Guatemala, we also have our nonprofit is established also in Guatemala.
Oh, cool.
And so when groups, you know, desire to go to a different country, then we take them to Guatemala and we do many of the same things, but not all of the same things. We don't have the logistical base that we have in Honduras that we have in Guatemala.
So
but
what's
it's still a great place to go.
What's your niche? What's your calling? You talked about helping people find it, but what's the special God call on Tim?
Well, when I first went down my calling, I felt was being a preacher, you know, and so we built a church down there and I jumped in the pulpit and of course, you know, all these things are making our church back home very happy.
Yeah.
But we figured out pretty quick, like that, you know, it's better to train Honduran men and women in a predominantly Catholic society. It's better to train the men and women in Honduras and teach them to have a self-sustainable church themselves and not always be counting on the gringos, you know, to
yeah.
be there to handle everything. And so once I figured that out, that was a big help for me and it took a real load off of my shoulders. And I would start going around to visit all those other churches that we had planted. And so I started focusing my calling on mentoring young men and older guys that would be working in those churches and with those churches and trying, you know, to steer the right people, the right Hondurans and their wives to an educational program that was going to give them a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge, a program like Baxter Institute has. They have up to a 5-year program there. You learn Greek and Hebrew, and then there's several other smaller operations down there. Bika is one of them, and Bika is a 2-year program, and it's a very good program. If you can't dedicate yourself to a 4 or 5 year program, and Bika doesn't cost as much to be a student. And so they go for 2 years and they get a good level of education and how to share and how to evangelize and, you know, how to be part of the church. But, so when they come out of those things, I enjoy again encountering them and you know, working with children's homes and we're just called to, I mean, I just, as soon as I get off the plane in Honduras, I love it because I go into a service mode like it's hard for me to do here in the States, but I can do it in Honduras. There's more people to serve there. They want to listen to you talk about the Bible. They know there's a God. They believe there's a God and they want to know more about him.
Yeah.
And the churches that are in their communities are the ones that they're learning from. And in many cases, those are the churches that we help to establish. So if anybody's listening to this and you want to you want to build a church in an area or a community, and you know, feel free to get in touch with me, and we'll make it happen.
So is this where we like start singing "Just As I Am" and pass around the plates and, you know?
Yeah, sometimes that works. You know, a lot of churches have like what they call a mission Sunday giving. Okay. So they design one Sunday a year just for their missions work, and that, you know, the elders decide, or their missions committee decides how that those funds will be spent. But you know, we're very blessed with the churches that come, get to see what is capable of happening. I remember this past summer, one of your guys, man, his name is escaping me, Marshall.
Marshall, sorry. Yep.
Marshall and I were walking beside each other, and we were coming down a hill, and he said, "What would it take to get water up here to these people?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, if I just had to give you a figure off the top of my head," and I looked to the right, and there was, you know, a dribble of water in a little crevice going through this property. And I said, "If it's possible, we could put a little solar pump there and pump the water that's coming down this little tiny stream up to a tank and get that, you know, dispersed to the people."
Yeah.
Come to find out, we couldn't get that property. We couldn't use that property. And so the price obviously had to go up, right, because we were going to have to drill a well at that point. And when Marshall found out how much it was, I think he had to sit down for a second.
A little bit.
Because it went from 5,000 to 25,000 real quick.
It did.
And but your church responded in such a powerful way. And I'm not sure if any other churches joined in your...
Several did, yes.
Several did in the giving for this well and this community. And so y'all did raise the money, and the well is working, and you and Marshall came down and got to see that community. Mm. And since y'all have been there, we put a second well in that community. And one of these days you can tell that story. And so now the combined pumps are getting 60 gallons a minute, I think.
Something crazy.
Maybe 50, 55 gallons, something like that. It fluctuates a little bit, but it's an awful, it's more than enough water. In fact, it's enough water to probably feed the whole town. And that might come to that later. But for right now, we're in a big chunk of a community that's on the edge of Ohohona. And so all those people have water directly to their houses now. And it's a beautiful thing when God's plan comes together.
Man, that whole experience was just so cool. And what's neat is I have on my desk while we're having this interview, there is a mason jar of water from that well. It's just a reminder of what God can do through his people.
Did you see me drink from that pipe?
I did, before it was filtered or anything. It was a great moment. I thought Marshall and Dalton were both going to have heart attacks right then and there watching you.
Well, I want to challenge you to take a big sip of that water right now. Did you get it tested?
I did not get it tested, but I boiled it and I ran it through a filter, and I've already had
you
some.
Boiled it? Come on, man.
It ruins the flavor, right? I did.
You cheated. We'll get you some more this summer.
Okay. Well, you know, you and I'll drink together from the source and see what happens. How about that?
That's right. We'll still be all right.
If it's good enough for you, I'll follow your lead.
Okay. Good. And so that's you know, my ministry is my calling, I guess, is going back and forth right now. You know, maybe eventually one of these days I'll be back down there full time, and that will be a good thing eventually.
Yeah.
But for right now, I'm where I'm at. We're taking care of my mother, and she's 90 years old, and we're just here to make sure that she's taken care of.
Absolutely. That's an important ministry.
And we go back and forth to Honduras, and you know, we have a blast.
So
we go and speak to churches here in the States. If somebody wants to know more about Torch, I'll load up my booth and my video projector and my computer, and my wife and I will come and tell everybody about it, and and sign them up to come. Same as what we did for your somebody in your group that actually was at a different church and came over to your church,
Tyler Quinn,
and got y'all signed up, Tyler Quinn.
Yeah,
and that worked out great. So
you hooked him, and he hooked us. It's like a bad timeshare sales presentation or something. I'm not sure.
Well, that's right. Maybe one of these days we'll be really successful and live in a van down by the river.
That's what we all aspire to someday, in a van down by the river.
That's right.
So let me take you back to something you said earlier. You talked about how one of the things that happens is you are able to help people. I'm not going to get the words right, but you talked about having burning bush experiences.
Right.
Having real connections with God. And I think that's a really important thing for us to talk about, because a dirty secret of life in church is that you can go to church a long time and not have an encounter with God.
So true.
I'm not entirely sure how I want to ask this next question, but can you tell me a little of how God has shown up in your ministry, your life? Can you tell me anything about those burning bush stories? The laser story is an incredible one. You know, here's this thing that I thought was impossible, and God said, surprise, here you go.
Right.
But I know that you've had thousands of others.
I have. They just happen so regular, and it's really something. You know, I'll give you an example. You know, we will frequently say to our waiter, whether we're in the States or whether we're in Honduras or wherever we are, we'll say to our waiter at a restaurant, hey, we're ministers, and I just want to know if there's anything we can pray for you for. So last summer when we were in Roatan for a couple of days, I asked our waiter that, and he kind of broke up and teared up a little bit and said that he had been working with the youth group, that he was their makeshift youth minister, which excited me, because I was a youth minister at one time. And I said, well, you know, the Bible says we got to take care of our kids, and we got to take care of our orphans, and we got to take care of our widows, and we got to be a part of our churches, and we got to live Jesus, you know, every day. And he, you know, told us what he was going through there at his church in Roatan. He said that, and they speak English. And he said that their people weren't very serious, that they didn't even have Bibles for everybody at church. And in fact, he didn't have a Bible. He was having to use a church Bible every time he went to church, and he'd have to leave it there.
Oh, wow.
And so I told him, I said, look, I don't have them with me. Of course, I went back to our group, and I asked everybody, does anybody have some Bibles?
Yeah.
And they didn't bring any. Nobody brought any other than their, you know, their personal ones that they didn't want to let go of, and I understand that.
Yeah.
I've had my Bible since I was 18. So my dad would mark up a Bible and give them away and just grab another blank one and keep going. I'm not quite there yet. but I told that guy, I said, look, here's what we're going to do. I said, we're going to pray about it, and we're going to see what God will do for you, some Bibles.
Yeah.
And so we certainly asked people, you know, if they had Bibles. They said no. And so I felt God telling me, hey, you got to get this kid some Bibles. We had Bibles back at our mission house. And so we went back to the mission house. And after we got you guys off back to the States, then we went and took one case, 24 Bibles, back to them. They're English Spanish Bibles, and they're kind of what we would call like a legacy Bible. They're like leather bound or
the nice ones.
Faux leather.
Yeah.
Very nice Bibles. You know, they're study Bibles. We have a great supporter from Seattle that helps to get those to us, and he buys those and ships them here to Louisiana. We ship them down. So we took him back a case of Bibles. And when we walked back in, you should have seen his face. We handed him the box. Man, he was crazy excited. he said, man, I never thought I'd see y'all again. And I said, well, I told you we'd be back, and here we are. We got your Bibles, and we got to spend some time talking and mentoring with him. But that just came off of a simple question. Is there something we can pray for you for at the table?
Yeah.
God showed up and said, hey, you need to get that kid Bibles. You know, that's the least we can do. You know, you got a servant that wants to use them. The least we can do is get them Bibles. You have no idea, Matthew, how hard it is to raise money for Bibles.
Really?
Okay. It's easy to raise money for a house. You know, people have no problem, you know, putting in money to build a house for a family that might be, you know, sleeping on the street or sleeping in a car that doesn't run, or, you know, sleeping on the floor somewhere. No problem. They'll pitch in for food even. But it's difficult to get people to buy. When you tell people, I need 1,000 Bibles for the summer, it's hard for them to even comprehend that. You know, how are you going to use 1,000 Bibles? Well, we give Bibles away. We go to the hospital, we're giving Bibles away. We go, you know, and the people are gladly accepting them and reading them.
Yeah.
Because they know they're in a spot where they need God. You know, I can tell you stories of going to the hospital, and for me and for most participants, when we go to the hospital and see the kids that are there and see what they have to go through and how kind of backwards the teaching hospital is there and how it's just not that great. But these people long for those Bibles, and we get to go in there and pray with them and their children, study some with them, have some time with them. When I lived there full time, I used to go there to the rooms, and I had a cart, and I had a video projector, and I had my computer, and I'd play for them VeggieTales on the wall.
Oh, wow.
In each room, and then they'd watch it for 45 minutes, and when the show was over, I would push it to the next room, and you know, every week I'd take a new series down.
You had VeggieTales memorized, didn't you?
Oh, man, that was so much fun, and the kids loved it.
Yeah.
We built playgrounds in the hospital for the kids and painted murals on the walls, and you know, these team leaders have extraordinary people that come with them, and we try to find out what their talents are when they first get there. If painting a mural and art is their gift, then we want to use it for God's glory.
Yeah.
We want them to see it being used for God's glory, you know? And then, you know, those are, you know, there's just so many stories. We run across people all the time. I'll tell you about a lady who wanted a house. And typically you go into a community and the women there start asking for houses because they have a lot that they've secured, but they're living in a makeshift tent or under some plastic. So they come out of the woodwork trying to ask you for a house. And so let's say a group has 10 houses that they can build or that they've brought money for. And so we go out and pick 10 families in a community that we think are the most in need. And then one lady, after I had already decided which 10 people were going to get the houses in that community for that group,
yeah,
one lady came up to me and she just, the persistent widow is what she reminded me of.
Yeah.
Okay. She was not given up under any circumstance. And so she came up with a story to tell me that she had snakes in her walls and they were poisonous. And at night when they would try to sleep, these snakes would slither back and forth in her cardboard walls, and the cardboard would move, and they never knew if a snake could get into their house or not, but they were scared and never got good sleep because they knew these poisonous snakes were there.
Yikes.
And I said, all right, that's a new one, right? Yeah. I hadn't heard that.
That's a new story.
You know, if she had said, you know, even the dogs get the scraps that fall from the master's table, right?
Right.
If she had said that, I would have felt obligated. But she said snakes in the walls, and I said to her, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to come down there to your house, and we're going to tear it apart. We're going to take your walls apart, and we're going to kill those snakes. And if there are poisonous snakes in your walls, we'll build you a house. But if there aren't, then, you know, we're just going to have to patch you back up and consider it a waste of time. And she said, come on, let's go. And we got up there with some guys and shovels and hose and started to tear her walls apart. And sure enough, poisonous snakes came out.
Oh, wow.
What are the chances, right? I mean, we never encounter poisonous snakes when we're building.
Yeah.
That's the only time that we've ever encountered snakes while building a house.
That's crazy.
And so I told her, I said, lady, you're getting a house. Yeah. I said, I don't know where the money's coming from yet, but I know this. You're going to get a house.
Well, with these snakes, we got to burn this one down, you know.
Oh, we tore that one up. You know, we had to, I paid for her to stay in a little hotel at the bottom of the hill that night. And the next day was pouring down rain. And I mean, pouring down rain. And we could not get to several of the sites that we had planned to do in that community that day. And I said, well, let's build the snake lady's house. And we did. And she came home from work. Her kids were there during the day. And, you know, we couldn't call her to tell her that we were there building her house. But when she came home from work, she had a new house. And just the joy, that the crying, you know, the tears, the thanking Jesus, and just how abundant. When God says, I'm going to give you life and life more abundant, that's what he's talking about.
Yes, sir.
When you encounter him, you listen to him, you seek his voice, you knock on the doors, you look for opportunities, and you do everything you can to meet whatever needs you can with the resources that you have. You sometimes can't meet those resources. But those things happen literally every day. If you leave the compound, even if you stay at the compound, somebody's probably going to be knocking on the gate wanting to talk to you about an opportunity. There's no shortage of God moments that can change your life. You go to a children's home, you see that, you know, a children's home could be run better. And so you say, hey, Tim, you know, we'd love to build a children's home, or we'd love to run a children's home. And I'd say, well, we can work on that, but first you need to prove that, you know, you're capable of running a children's home. We had some young ladies that did that. They graduated from Freed and Lipscomb. They were real good friends, and they came down and ran a children's home for many years and did a great job.
Wow.
And so they were just came out on a torch trip. Okay. They saw a God moment, and we just helped to facilitate some of the need, and the introductions, and making sure that they had clearances to run a children's home and permits and a place to have the children's home and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that's what being connected to the government does help us to do, is they do help us find locations. They'll donate land for us to put those locations in. They will help, you know, to provide things for those children if they're in a children's home situation or school. They'll make sure that the teachers are paid and get to go to those schools. And like in one place, we built a little wooden school. And, you know, we thought that would just hold them until the government would come in and help build a concrete block one. And it did. But had it not been for our governmental connections, the school never would have been built out of concrete block. Yeah. And now that school sees and has 600 students a day that go there. And it's a bilingual school. They all learn English. They're all taught English from the Bible. And that's one of the reasons we have those legacy Bibles as well for our schools, and for the children's homes that can study, and for the prisons. We use those in prison ministry as well.
Wow.
So all those things are God things. You know, when you encounter somebody, you don't have anybody giving you Bibles, and then you got one guy that says, hey, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
I can't come to Honduras, but I got money, and I'm going to buy them, and I'm going to periodically send them to you. And he'll send us usually 100 Bibles at a time, 5 or 6 cases. and we'll ship those to Honduras and we'll distribute them, you know, 5 or 6 cases at a time. But we need people to donate for Bibles, or we need Bibles donated. We can buy them in Honduras this week for $1.60 a Bible.
Oh wow, that's cheap.
Next week they can be $4.50 because the batch of Bibles will run out, and then the next batch might be $4.50 a pop, and we won't buy any. We won't be able to buy any at that price.
Right.
And these are whole Bibles, you know. They're not legacy Bibles, but they're whole Bibles. They're in Spanish. And so we, Old and New Testament, we'll put those in each one of the food bags that we pack. And usually each group will pack between 200 and 400 bags for their group. And so hence 1,000 Bibles get used up, you know, easily. In fact, this summer, I believe we're looking to try to have 5,000 Bibles that we can distribute. So if you know anybody that wants to buy Bibles, if they get this podcast soon,
yeah,
then $1.60 a pop, that'll help us out, and it'll put the word in somebody's hand that needs it.
And go to the IRC Corp website to do that, or message you.
Yes,
or...
they can. They can do either one. Okay. Text me, call me. You know, I'm easy to find, I'm not easy to get rid of once I'm your buddy, though.
Well, you found that
if
out today.
If you stop coming to Honduras for a couple of years, I'm going to call you and say, hey, what's up?
Yeah,
what's
going on? Where have you been? You know, you need to repent. Right. You know,
you ain't been to the mission field lately, brother. Come on.
Man, I'm so excited about this summer. I think from our church, there's close to 30 people coming for that week.
That's awesome.
And it's just going to be a really, I mean, God's going to do some cool stuff. He likes to show off.
Yep. That's right. He does. And he likes to teach us that we can count on him. So when we talk about those God moments, you know, he makes them readily available if we're paying attention.
Yeah.
If we're looking. And for me, I've learned to pay attention. And I'm whether I'm here in the States or whether I'm there, I'm praying for the waiter. I'm looking for people in the community to help. You know, disaster comes along and we're right in the thick of it, cutting trees off people's houses or demucking a house or helping in any way that we can. We have a large base of volunteers here in the States that we can tap into in cases of disasters, and those people come and serve, and that's great.
That's awesome.
And people get helped, whether we're here in the States or whether we're in Honduras.
Man, it's really good stuff. It's really good stuff. Well, Tim, is there anything else you want to share with us today?
Well, you know I'm a talker, so I could keep going, but let's cut it off.
Okay.
And if people really like it and they want to do it and they want to hear more, we'll do another one. How's that?
Absolutely. We can do that. And, you know, really the best thing they can do is just get a plane ticket next Honduras trip and come sit in the cafeteria next to you for a couple hours and get the story straight, right?
Yeah, that's right. And when you get tired, when we stop talking the conversation at the table, we'll load you in my truck and you spend all day with me.
That's right. It'll be great.
Just like Matthew and Marshall got to do.
Oh, it was.
And so you get to hear stories that, you know, nobody else is going to hear. I'm not going to say them on a podcast, but I'm here to tell you that so many people, so many great Christians have come through torch trips and go back and they're completely changed. Mm. They're not the same. And that's how you know they're encountering God, is when they come back and they say, you know, I don't need fancy shoes, Dad, to go to school this year. Let's just go to Walmart and buy us a pair. I don't need, you know, a ton of clothes. In fact, I'm going to give half of my clothes away. And they start doing this kind of stuff. Their behavior changes.
Yeah.
Their focus changes. And so those are impacts that, you know, are very hard to measure because we're not keeping up with everybody back in the States, but we do get to hear some great stories and the God moments that they encounter in Honduras. And listen, I know I got a buddy that does mission work in Nicaragua. I got buddies that do mission work all over Central and South America. And there's nothing like being in the mission field, and you don't have to speak the language, as you know. We'll tell you what to say and how to say it. And a lot of times you don't even need to say words. A lot of times it's painting a little girl's fingernails and or playing a counting game with dice, and you know, it's a playing marbles with little kids. You know, it's just, there's so much stuff that can be done in these communities that give you an opportunity to be what God has called you to be.
Totally.
So, hey, I'm looking forward to this summer. I'm juiced, man. I can't, when it gets to this time of the year, you know, I'm sitting like I'm a starter on a line to run against Usain Bolt, man. And I'm thinking I'm going to win.
Yeah. Okay. Got it twitching, ready to go.
But I'm thinking I'm going to. I feel like I can, you know?
Well, I think you're going to win. So, that's what I think.
Well, we're going to win in the end, right? We're all going to win in the end if we're walking in the light.
That's right.
As he is in the light. And God loves us, and we're doing the best we can. That's what I know. And
yeah.
And you know, we don't have it all figured out, but we'll tweak it every year if we need to do the best that we can and be the best we can for God.
Absolutely.
And my son, his wife, and his children are such a positive force for God in Honduras, and they're super healthy. They're sharp minded. They're very willing, capable, and loving to the point of sacrifice.
Yes,
and they sacrifice all the time for people that need it.
Oh, they were so good, and spending time with them was such a blessing too.
Yeah. Well, man, I can't wait for the summer. Sign up as many people as you can. Tell anybody who wants to go on a trip, if they just want to get online, figure out which trip they want to come on, we'll make it happen.
That's awesome. Absolutely. Well, friends, thank you so much for your time today. Thank Tim for your time, and thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing this. And until the next time, I can't wait to hear what God does in your story.
Thanks for listening to Rough Drafts. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. While you're at it, help us spread the word by leaving a rating and review. Until next time, let's keep looking for how God writes his love into our stories.